for making your argument regarding your client's position. An additional 5 minutes is reserved for rebuttal to appellant counsel. A reminder to please state your name and the individual you're speaking on behalf of before beginning your remarks. And appellant counsel, when you're ready, you may approach the podium.
Good morning.
It's on.
Oh, it's on? Okay.
Yes. And you can, there's a button on the podium if you need to have it adjusted for height, up or down, whichever way you want to go. It's right on the side.
A little bit down would be fine.
Right in front. In front, down by your waist.
Oh, here it is. Okay. Okay. Okay, good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lau Yang. I'm counsel for the appellant in this matter, Guyton Lee, spelled L-Y. And in this matter, the appellant and respondent were married, and they had a divorce in Hennepin County, Minnesota, before referee Richard Stebbins. The issue that is present before the court is that in regards to the financial marital accounts of the parties.
Before we even get into the marital accounts, I understand that's what your client is objecting to, but there was not a motion for a new trial, and we don't have a transcript. This was not provided on behalf of your client. So how are we to determine what factual inaccuracies there would be in the record?
Your Honor, my client, as I stated to the court and submitted correspondence to the court, could not afford the transcripts for a three-day trial at that time. And
what do we do with that on appeal?
Okay, on appeal, he's basically going over what the judge ordered in this case.
No. What do we do? You said that he couldn't afford the transcript. There are certain standards of review and scope of review that depend on whether we have a transcript and whether there was a post-trial motion filed. Judge Warkey's question goes to both those things. There was no post-trial motion filed for amended findings. There was no transcript presented to this court. So under our case law, regardless of whether it was because of lack of funds, doesn't that restrict significantly the scope of our review?
The scope of review is a clearly erroneous standard that we're...
It's only clear error if we're reviewing the factual findings, but if we don't have a transcript and there was no motion for a post-trial motion regarding the findings, we don't review for clear error, do we, under the case law?
Well...
And if so, what is the case law that supports that proposition?
Under Olson v. Olson, the court has the broadest exercise of discretion to review where there is a clearly erroneous standard of the trial courts.
In that case, was there a transcript provided and was there a post-trial motion?
I believe a transcript was provided.
So in this case, there was not a transcript provided and there was no post-trial motion. So lacking those two things, on what basis in law would we be reviewing for clear error?
I'm not sure where, this. I thought that going over the rules, if he cannot afford it, I made a motion to the court saying that he cannot afford the transcript, and
Unfortunately, that
would the court then just terminate his
How does that change our review, I guess? Is there some support in the case law that says our standard of review is relaxed, where it otherwise would be constrained, if the reason for the lack of a transcript is the lack of funds? Is there case law or a rule that supports that?
I don't think so. I don't have that.
Well, our problem and our issue is we don't know what was said at the trial court because we don't have a transcript to review. I wasn't there. My colleagues were not there. We don't know. So we have to accept what the court order indicates in its findings of fact. You do concede in the court order that the referee Stebbins indicated that your client had not provided credible evidence of any of his claims, and we have to accept that as true.
And my client highly disputes that.
Well, I know he disputes it, but we have nothing to discount that.
Okay. Here's what we have is, if you look at the order and all that, there were numerous accounts that were discovered at trial. And with the purpose of dividing marital asset is that you must not conceal anything and you must show everything. At trial, she was disclosed that she had 12 accounts.
Didn't the district court address that and say that those accounts belong to the children? Wasn't that a finding made by the district court?
That's what a couple of the there was a for a couple of the accounts, that through her testimony only a couple of the accounts were for the children, and so now
I can assure you, Mr. Yang, that we have all of us have thoroughly read the referee's findings of fact and order. What is it that you want us to do at this point? Do you want us, based on that, to return this to district court? What do you want us to do?
Well, I want the court to remand this to district court to look into all the marital accounts and divide this fairly and equitably. Minnesota statutes 518.58 subdivision 1A clearly states that, you know, you should not conceal marital assets. And in this case, we feel that you have a balance of 2 accounts from my client and 19 accounts from his ex-wife, and that is grossly unfair to my client and to the legal system.
To understand that, yep, is your client's argument.
Yep. And so, with that, are there any other questions?
It appears not.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We will hear from respondent counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Tiffany Wolter, and I represent the respondent in this matter, Michelle Lee. I think that
Ms. Wolter, do you agree that this court is bound by the court's findings?
I agree that the review of this court is to determine whether or not the court's findings support the conclusions of law that were made.
Well, that's if there's no transcript, but in this case, we don't have a transcript. And we don't have a post-trial motion.
Correct.
Am I correct or not correct that our review is even further restricted, that we don't review for clear error?
Right. You review to make sure that the findings that the trial court made actually support the conclusions that were ordered, essentially. And in this case, I do believe that all of the court's findings are all of the court's conclusions of law are clearly supported by the findings that the trial court made.
Right. I gather that. Yeah. I just saw in your brief seemed to suggest that we're reviewing for clear error as opposed to the standard you just misunderstood your brief then, I guess.
I guess my brief focused on both arguments, right? The fact that the trial court did make the appropriate findings to support the conclusions, and even if this court decided that that wasn't the standard of review, if we review all of the findings that the trial court made, the trial court didn't make any erroneous findings.
And
so,
with that said, your position
correct.
On behalf of your client is simply to affirm the trial court on the basis of the record.
Correct, Your Honor. Right. In this case, essentially, appellant is asking you to relook at the evidence, right? I mean, even if the transcript had been ordered, this court's role isn't to relook at the evidence and decide something differently than the trial court. You're bound by the trial court's finding of credibility, and in this case, the court determined that respondent was more credible than appellant. The trial court looked at the evidence, and if this court actually takes a look at the evidence, you can see that all of these 12, 19, I'm not really sure how many accounts that they're alleging were concealed here. You can see that the transfers were made to the children in these accounts. And there is no evidence that was provided that my client, the respondent, is actually an owner of these accounts. The evidence provided shows that the children are the owners of these accounts. So appellant comes to you today saying that we need to equitably divide any marital accounts, but appellant didn't provide any evidence to the trial court indicating that these accounts were even marital, that respondent was the owner of any of these accounts. In fact, one of the accounts that he says was concealed is actually the address of the Wells Fargo in Brooklyn Center. It's, you know, so it's...
And
it's,
we've read yeah. the court order, so we're well aware of that. We're just wondering what you want us to do as far as the record that's before us.
The record is based on... The only record that the court has is the trial court's order and then the exhibits, right? So that brings into question the fact that I did submit a motion to strike portions of respondent's brief as well. Appellant's brief, not respondent's brief. Appellant's brief in multiple occasions cites testimony that was given, talks about cross-examination, talks about testimony of appellant's brother, things like that. And I did bring a motion to exclude any statements in the brief that refer to any testimony given. So I'd like the court to strike those portions of the brief. And then I'd like the court to, I guess, affirm the trial court's determination here.
One thing you could bring up is the award of attorney's fees, because it looks as if there was an amount ordered that was doesn't add up, because mm-hmm. a motion fee is $75. Is that correct, or was that just an error of referee Stebbins?
Well, again, we don't have anything in the record to say here's what the motion filing fee was.
We can take judicial notice of what Hennepin County's charges are for such a thing, and I'm asking if you dispute
okay.
whether the filing fee is actually $75.
I do. I believe it's more than that, because there is an additional fee for e-filing. So I'm not exactly sure which filing fee was paid by Ms. Lee in this matter, but I do not believe that the actual filing fee is $75. I believe it's a little bit more, 80, 82, something like that. The appellate court is limited to reviewing the findings of fact made by referee Stebbins. And in this case, referee Stebbins states in the order that neither party filed an affidavit of attorney's fees, which is why the attorney's fees award was limited to $999 plus court filing fees. The trial court found in its estimate that the filing fees were $650 based on the fact that it didn't have any other evidence to suggest what those fees were. So in this situation, the trial court's findings do support the conclusion that was made, and that is the appellate court's standard of review. If the court does find perhaps that $650 was too much, we're really talking about a couple of $100 here, and I don't know that it's worth it to remand this to the district court over...
I think what I'm hearing you say is because they did not provide evidence to dispute it that you are not responsible for that. That something on appeal
right.
is not presumed to be in error.
Right, right. I would also argue that it's a de minimis argument, right? I mean, we're talking about a couple of $100 here. So I don't know that it's worth it to remand this to the district court over what could be, you know, $400 and some as far as the error goes. So
on the filing fee, you mentioned that it's not 75, it's something else. What is that? What is the amount and what would we look for?
You said there might have been an electronic.
I believe there is an addition. I don't typically do the e-filings in my office. My assistant does that, so I don't see what the fees are. But I believe that somebody told me that it was an additional $5 for.
And there's a rule somewhere that would tell us what that amount is.
There is certainly
a county rule.
Correct. There is certainly a rule that would tell us that somewhere. But again, you know, I don't believe that it's up to you to go find that, or it's up to me to tell you that. It should have been something that was provided to the trial court. We should have gone to the trial court initially. We should have done a motion for amended findings or a new trial, and the court should have been given the ability to correct that error if there was an error. Right? You guys are not the people to correct those errors. The trial court is supposed to be given the opportunity to do that before we get here, and the appellant did not take that step. Therefore, like I say, your review is limited to, did the trial court make appropriate findings that support its conclusions? And in this case, the trial court did.
Well, the filing fee would be reviewed in a separate, the costs and fees would be subject to a different analysis than the substantive findings of fact. Our scope
right.
of review.
Right, your scope of review is abuse of discretion.
Right, so if we were to look to the record and we were to look to the actual rules of court in Hennepin County and determine what the filing fee was, you would agree that we can make an adjustment or make a decision on that particular part of the case?
Well, theoretically, I think you could, but legally, I think because the appellant did not make a motion for amended findings, I don't believe it's this court's role to go in and correct those errors. That should have been done to the trial court, not to the appellate court.
Understood.
Okay. Are there any further questions that I can answer?
Sure not. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
And back to the appellant counselor, is anything else you wish to add?
No, nothing further.
All right, the matters have been submitted, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame, which is 90 days. Thank you for coming today.